been working up there for about 27 hours straight now.
Mm-hmm. All right, Chad, go ahead.
Okay, I'll be real brief with the fire warden report. Basically, it's just hot, dry, and windy out there. We've had more fire activity than normal. One fire investigation. We've had a change in our fire investigation lead, Aaron Fazendine from Battalion 2, and Big Piney Marbleton is now our new lead fire investigator. Fire prevention's been going very well. Public education's going well. We're actually doing really well in our recruit. We haven't even started our recruit drive, but folks are just coming in on a pretty regular basis. Right now we've got 15 firefighters, and we're not even trying to really actively recruit that have already signed up. So we're doing really well, and I'll continue to push that. So I'm really pleased with that. Training, we had a water shuttle class in August. It went very well. We had a tremendous turnout for that. A lot of what we use in that water shuttle class, we use every time we have a structure fire outside of the city limits where there's no hydrants available. I just canceled the hazmat training exercise. We did have a joint exercise scheduled with Ultra to coordinate with private industry and make sure we understood how their incident response expectations were and how their organization structure worked. Just because of the fire, we ended up canceling that. This winter, we've got a Firefighter 2 class coming up. One of the things we did is got a YDOT tester established. Will Gay, our training officer, is now a proctor for YDOT, and he's able to evaluate our firefighters to get that DOT license, or the Class B commercial driver's license. So that's been a big help for our organization. Training facility uses, just the LEPC meeting. Lately, health and safety, our evac program is continuing. I heard that it slowed down some. I'm drawing a blank right now as to why, but it slowed down for something. Health fair just went very well. Immunizations, right now, we're pushing real hard. OSHA requires that all first responders have at least a Hep B shot, so we're pushing real hard to make sure our firefighters have that, or a declination. They can choose to decline if they want to, but either I need something in writing or an actual Hep B shot, so we're working through that process to make sure everybody's got what they need. Continuing our cooperative services, you guys know that meeting with the state and local resources actively, and volunteer hours are doing well. On the radio reports, this is a change in the format. In the past, the radio reports have always been put together by me, and I just try to briefly explain and summarize how the tower is progressing. We had a new project manager that was installed on from the Harris side. Francesco there. We've seen tremendous progress with the new project manager. I'm very pleased with that. He's really making good progress. We're definitely far behind the eight ball as far as our original aggressive time schedule. But now with the fire, I'm not sure. But there was still a chance that we can get some towers stood up and get this thing implemented. With the fire, things might be delayed significantly, and we'll see where that lands. I won't go into great detail. I'll let you read that at your leisure, but there's some good information there. Francesco did a pretty good job of summarizing where the radio system currently is and the progress that's being made. So I'll leave that to you, but I'm ready to answer any questions about the County Fire Warden's report or the radio report, and otherwise I'll explain the current situation.
Anything to report on White Pine on that?
Ongoing. I'll get it to you.
Okay. Old business?
Yeah. I'll get to it. Why don't we go to the present situation?
With glory,
Chad.
Okay. All right. Current situation. Right now, we're basically we're discovering approximately 2 to 3 new fires each day. We're actively engaging in suppressing those. There are a variety of different locations throughout the county. We're trying to catch them and keep them small. There was 2 new ones just from the time that I left the fire this morning until I got here. There was 2 new ones that are discovered. One of the nice things is we've got air attack and helicopters in the air, and they're able to to see the smoke early and get resources on them right away and get them caught and handled before they have any chance to get some steam on them. Hmm. I can't say that I've seen unusual fire activity, more so than I've ever seen in my career. It's really hot, dry, and windy out there. We've had red flag warning days for the last several weeks, and it's just been cumulative. The fuels are very receptive to burn right now. Basically, It's unusual to say this, but, you know, all the conifers are burning, all the sagebrush is burning, all the willows are burning, the grass is burning, even the aspen's burning right now. Mm-hmm. And that's unusual. Usually it's, you know, different vegetation types burn at different times of the year. And right now with just the fall weather and the hot, dry, windy weather conditions, the field is very, very receptive, and we've seen just a significant amount of new starts in the county, and we've been real busy trying to keep those knocked down. Had just phenomenal close coordination with the U.S. Forest Service. We're working, you know, pocket to pocket here, and coordinating resources between what they can bring to bear and what I can bring to bear. I've been in phone calls all day long, all day yesterday, again all day today, calling all of our surrounding county fire wardens, and they're all sending resources to help us out. And then we've been in contact with our surrounding states as well. This is different than the usual resource ordering request process, the way it normally goes. And the reason why is we're having difficulty filling the resources that we're requesting. There's just a whole lot of fire all the way around us, and resources are very critical and very scarce. And so we're doing everything we can to loosen those resources up and basically on a as called basis, we're just name requesting and doing everything we can to get resources to come and help us out. Resources are starting to arrive, and we're starting to get around these things and really get a good picture for what we have. Basically, the current situation is we have two fires in the county. There's the Martin Fire, which is south McDougal Gap in the Roaring Fork Lakes drainage area in that part of the country. Majority of that fire was on the Lincoln County side of the line. Some of it was on the Sublet County side of the line. Yesterday, the winds are kind of eddying around in there, and yesterday it had two different heads, but it did slop over and push into the Sublet County side a little more than we anticipated. They're working that very well. There's a Type 3 incident management team that's overseeing the Martin Fire. They're actually based out of the Lincoln County side, though it's a little quicker for them to drive in from that side over on the Grays River Road. We're able to coordinate, though, when things happen on Sublet County. We're able to let some resources loose from the Roosevelt Fire, and like Air Resources is a good example. They're so close together. We're sharing a lot of our air resources over the two fires. I don't have estimated acreage. One of the critical resources that we're not getting filled right now is usually when you have a wildland fire, you call for an infrared flight every night, and what happens is a plane flies over with an infrared camera, and they're able to see the heat on the ground, and the reason why you do it at night is because there's a temperature variance. If you do it in the middle of the day, everything's hot, and it's hard to see that temperature variance, so every night we'll have a flyover in the infrared. And right now, because of the critical need for those infrared flights, they're flying all over everywhere right now, and we haven't been able to fill that request. So what that means is right now we don't have accurate mapping on the footprint of the fire, so we don't know the exact acreage. And I mean, we know when we're standing there on the mountaintop looking at it, and we know when we do a flight, what it is, but it's awful hard to look at it from 11,000 foot in the air and say, okay, that's about 10,000 acres or whatever it is. So I don't have an accurate estimate on the acreage of the Martin Fire. It would be safe to say it's in excess of 10,000 acres at this time, and probably excess of that as well. But if you couldn't hold me to any accurate acreage.
It's a major fire, though.
Yep. And then the Roosevelt Fire is the one that's further up north. It started above the Hoback, Upper Hoback Road there. Basically all the way to the end of the Upper Hoback and travel up in there about 4 or 5 miles further past the edge of the road was where it originally started. And it's because of the hot, dry, windy conditions, it's been just really pushing hard and moving fast. Moving primarily in an eastward direction, it's come out of the backcountry, and now it's impacted the Upper Hoback subdivision. I'm sure you heard from Casey earlier, we evacuated that yesterday. It's come up out of the drainage, and it's up on top of the rim, and now the fire is progressing towards the Rolling Thunder and Jim Bridger Estates subdivisions, and we evacuated those as well yesterday. Right now, the fire activity, I was up there at 6 this morning, and the fire activity was actively burning, group tree torching, which is, again, unusual. Normally, you know, at nighttime when the temperatures drop down, the relative humidities come back up, and winds usually die down. So usually nighttime is when it's most calm, and especially, you know, early in the morning. But when I got there this morning, it was actively burning, and we were actively engaging fire. I got a call last night at 12:30. They were... What's going on is the fires, the winds are shifting at daytime as heat rises, the wind's going up the canyon, and nighttime as it cools off, the winds are coming down the canyon. And so the fire's going one direction, and it comes back and comes the other way. So last night the fire was coming back down towards the structures, and our firefighters were out there actively engaging and stopped the fire. We haven't lost any structures, but... resources are critical and worth it.
Okay. So are we getting to the point where there's going to be a cost share pretty quick?
I'm focusing on operations right now, okay. And I haven't initiated that conversation. It will occur, yeah. But right now my stance is I'm focusing on the suppression efforts.
Okay. Are you going to need a member of the commission to attend daily briefings at some point here?
My hope is I can continue to inform the board as the fire is progressing. If it becomes complex and we need some additional presence, I'll make that call at that time.
Okay.
Right now, I don't foresee a need to have you attend daily briefings.
Okay.
When we initiate the cost share agreements, I'll sit through those and get to the point where we come to an agreement where we can present a package to the commissioners. If you want me to approach that in a different format, though, I'm all willing to do whatever you want me to do.
Great way to approach it.
Yeah.
Do we help me remember when we get to cost share? Do we have to have approval from these guys like right away? Are
yeah.
we going to be We're going to be doing...
That's what we've
okay.
done. That's what's had to happen in the past, and that's why I asked you
we
about attending the daily briefings.
The commissioner that was there
yeah.
had to be authorized
to act on
those
the
decisions.
Yeah, because we might want to take that action.
That was before
yeah.
I was in
yeah.
place.
That was before Shad started.
Yeah. Right,
yeah.
That was before Shad. Now we've got somebody in place that
yeah.
does a lot of this for us.
Yeah.
So in the past, either Joel or I have gone up every day to incident command, and we've attended the meetings, and wherever there was a signature needed or such, then that's what we did.
Our last deal, though, we did a little bit of that because you went to some of that.
I was up there at Cliff Creek Fire.
Cliff Creek, yeah.
Yeah. Did a little bit of that, just simply so we would appoint someone to represent the commission and authorize them to sign, to make signatures on these cost share issues. I think having Shad bird dog it for us and then bring it to the person that is going to be assigned.
Or we could authorize Shad.
Well, that's true. We could authorize Shad to sign it, too. Doesn't have to be signed by a member of the commission, though.
I don't think so. You can sign it.
The other county fire wardens will sign it.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we can get the county fire warden to sign it. Good. Well, then we can assign that to Shad. That'd be great.
Can you explain the cost share?
Go ahead, Chad.
It's a very, very complex process. There's multiple different ways to figure out how the costs of the fire occur.
Federal land versus county land. If that fire crosses off of federal land into county X amount of percentage, then the county is responsible for the cost of fighting that.
Okay.
That's the oversimplification.
Okay, but
Shad, go ahead.
We can base it on acres burned. You know, X amount of acres are on private, X amount of acres are on federal. We can base it on percentage of effort. So much effort was spent on protecting private property. So much effort was spent on protecting forested lands. There's numerous different ways to figure out the most appropriate way to share those costs. I'm fully versed in. I've done cost share agreements before, and I'm well prepared to handle that. Right now, I wouldn't be prepared to make a recommendation on the right way to move forward, though.
So the other thing that happens, even like the next step, is that we have funds available to us to backfill us on the expenses through the state. But we also have funding of our very own, if it came down to that we had to offer up money. But we belong to the
state fire suppression
account. So we can submit for reimbursement there later. Mm-hmm.
And that's only if it hasn't been used up, right?
Well, we submit anyway, and then we find out what happens. Because a few years ago...
I'm just wondering if it's been used up on the other side of the state already.
No, because there hasn't been any fire in the state. There's only been really one fire in the state this year. But I know the year that we were, there was a lot of fire. We were late getting in, and the legislature appropriated more money.
I guess they didn't have to.
The state legislature has been very good about that. They've done more than once where they've funded that account when we deplete it.
So at this point, I think what I would recommend is that we authorize Shad to represent the county in these dealings at this point. And we should probably go ahead and do that by motion simply because so we have a record of it.
So move. Second.
So it has been moved and seconded that we appoint Shad as the signator and the representative of the commission on these fires. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries. And I've seen Shad negotiate the cost share. And I'd hate to be on the other side of the table. So it's good. And if you need something, call me.
Okay,
and I can be there.
Just a heads up, I've been coordinating with Billy at Road and Bridge, and there are some resource requests that Billy's been working with me on to fill, but I just wanted to keep the board informed.
Right, and Mac talked to me about that last night, and I called Billy last night and told him that he's got our support, whatever he needs to do.
Okay. That's what I was looking for.
That's been taken care of.
All right, well, that's all I got.
All right. Do you have anything to talk about, Mac, from your meeting?
Well, no. I guess the main thing, and I wish Casey was here, is that I was very impressed with you and Casey last night. And there again, we are on top of the world with you and Casey doing what you're doing. And we're very fortunate to have you guys in this position. Yeah. Wish you weren't doing it. You were just out doing classes, but... We've got the best people, and the Forest Service, you could tell by them, they were asking you a lot of questions, and most of the time that doesn't happen. So I'm very impressed.
We've got the right guys in charge.
Yeah, we've got the right guys in charge.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Commissioner Burnett.
Shad, has there been discussion with the Forest Service regarding bans on the forest?
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate bringing that up. Yeah, I've had numerous phone calls and conversations about the potential for fire restrictions. My position is that our resources are thin right now. We're able to handle what's currently happening, but it's close. So based on that, on the limited resource availability, I did make the recommendation not to the commission, but to the rest of the federal agencies that we look very closely at fire restrictions. The response I got back is that the federal agencies, looking at the expected weather forecast, the current fuel moisture contents, and the availability of resources, and then the short-term duration before a season-ending event, they didn't feel it'd be necessary because it takes so long to get restrictions enacted, and then by the time we got them enacted, that we'd probably have to rescind them. We'd have to rescind the restrictions. So the federal agencies are not supportive of doing fire restrictions at this time. And so my position is if we don't do it together as a group, we shouldn't do it because it gives conflicting messages to the public. But what we did do is we're doing a strong public education campaign right now to make sure everybody understands how critical the receptive fuels are and how likely it is to start a fire. And we're trying to get the message out there, no open burning, there's no fire restrictions, but we're trying to, discourage any open burning and prevent people from having any fires that we don't want.
So what you're saying, the feds can't realistically expect to come together and have a band before the snow flies, and so
I'm not saying
put
snow
the
flies.
Other in jeopardy until that point in time?
No, sir. That's not my... No, sir.
Because okay, he will be quoted.
That's the question.
Some change the subject.
No, that's not what he's saying.
I do want... We have a phenomenal working relationship with the U.S. Forest Service and BLM, and right now we're working hand in hand. We're having daily conference calls, and we're very, very closely monitoring the situation, and we are specifically talking about fire restrictions for a variety of different of reasons, you know, based on, you know, fire behavior, weather forecast, field conditions, and availability of resources. The federal response feels that it's reactive in nature, and it'll be a short-term problem that will be by the time we solve the problem will already be passed, right. And the restrictions won't be effective. So
so close to the end of the fire season.
Yeah, and then the other thing is right now closures are in place in the impacted area. So right now we're keeping the public out of the impacted area. So putting fire restrictions where that's already, you know, closures are in place and we're trying to keep the public out, there's not much benefit in putting fire restrictions where there's no people.
I was more concerned with fire restrictions in places that weren't closed.
I agree.
With hunting season coming up.
I agree.
Or in the midst of hunting season.
Yeah. Earlier you mentioned there was some two new starts this morning. Are they spurs off the existing fire or?
No. But I can't tell you what's starting.
Should be enough reason right there to discuss.
But they're in the high country. They're likely lightning starts. There very well could be some human starts though as well that are going on right now. And again, I fully expect at 3 o'clock today I'll have another phone conference with the other federal land management agencies, and we'll reevaluate on a daily basis. And when the federal agencies believe that it's appropriate, then they'll move forward. But my recommendation has been that we need to look strongly at it, and that I do believe it's appropriate. But again, I don't want to be the only agency that does move forward and have fire restrictions if we can't give consistent messaging to the public.
I know we've not done that in the past. We've always followed the lead of the Forest Service and the BLM on this, but the only reason I would even entertain it this time would be simply because you and your resources are stretched to the max.
Yes.
And if we enacted a fire ban within the county, that might just keep you from having to go to a structure fire or a field fire or something like that within the county. That would be the only reason why I would entertain that thought.
Yeah, and that was what I expressed to the federal managers as well. If the board is supportive of that, I think we can do that, but understand we'll be, you know, probably the only agency that does that.
I think we're going to leave that up to your judgment. You give us the recommendation on that if you feel like it's at that point where we need to enact the ban so that you're not chasing fires throughout the county and stretching your resources too thin.
Okay.
So you let us know.
Let me make that phone call this afternoon, and then I'll follow up, and we may need to hold a special meeting of the commissioners to enact that.
If we need to, we can.
By conference call.
We can do that by conference call. We just need 8 hours, right, Mary?
Huh?
8 hours?
8 hours to call.
That's all we need. This is 8 hours.
To make notice.
All right. I'll know more this afternoon.
Okay. Sounds good. So we'll go on your recommendation on that.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Great. Thanks, Chad. Okay. You better get back to work.
Yeah, I got plenty of.
We don't want to keep you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Chad.
Appreciate it.
Hang in there.
Yeah. Make sure you call me if you need something. Commissioner Rawhauser, did you have anything further to talk about your meeting last night?
About with Chad? No, other than the fact that it was an interesting meeting. I mean, there was so much stuff that I didn't realize.
I highly recommend it.
I was surprised.
Yeah, very educational.
There was no firefighters there. It was all logistical people.
It was all leadership.
Absolutely. It was all leadership people.
Chad, are they going to continue to have regular meetings? Or
what do you mean? Like in the public meetings?
Well, like you had last night.
So what last night was is a new incident management team came in to take over the Roosevelt fire, and we had to give them instruction basically on our expectations. There will be another Type 2 management team that comes in for the
Martin
fire. Thank you. The Martin fire as well, and there will be a second meeting just like that. I expect that'll probably be in Lincoln County, but I'll attend that one.
All right.
But there will be There will be public meetings too, I'm sure, but that'll be up to the incident management meeting, just to, our management team to schedule those public meetings.
Okay.
Very good. Thanks, Shad. Okay, appreciate it. All right. Why don't we pay a few bills here, and then we can start into some old business.
Because I got a, can I do a couple more things?
Oh, yeah. You got a few more?
Yeah, I got a couple more
things. Oh, good. Let's have a few more.
Okay.
I was hoping you did.
I do. So I have the contract for the architect for the remodel of the building for the conservation district. And we've had a bit of a discussion about the need for an agreement between the conservation district and the county. Couple of things, and I've talked to Mike Han about it. I've talked to Matt Gaffney, and Matt's willing to talk to us on the phone if we want to. But basically what the deal is that when we contract, we are paying the bill. We're paying for the remodel. So when we contract with the architect, we are the owner of the project. And so we're the guy that's going to sign off the contract with the architect as opposed to the district.
And that's what's different than anything else we've ever done. We're the owners of the project, but not the owners of the building.
Yeah. So that's one of the issues that has come up. The other issue is that we continue to figure out who's paying for what and how the money's going to work. If we have an agreement, I think that needs to be delineated, that the county's funding the project and that the county will pay the bills so that the county's auditable for the funding of the project.
Right.
The other thing that's probably the most important part of all is that if there is any issue with the construction, so construction is over, we've turned the keys over to the district, and the plumbing blows or the roof goes off or something like that, and there's some need for legal representation for the project.
Correct.
We cannot provide legal representation for the district. The county attorney represents the county. He doesn't represent the district and doesn't represent the project once we've turned it over. So we need to make some of those issues clear in an agreement with the conservation district.
Has Matt started exploring any kind of an agreement on this, or is he kind of waiting for our?
I think what he just wants from you guys is thumbs up, go ahead and do it. Yeah, we've talked about it. Mike's talked to him a little bit about what the agreement needs to be. Mike and I talked about it. We agree that there needs to be an agreement so it's all clear what everybody's doing. The other part I think that the district will bring to that is what their role is in the remodel project. You guys don't want to be making decisions on really any of that. It's just a matter of saying, okay, we're the fiduciary for this project, but the conservation district, the conservation staff are the guys that are going to be dealing with what color the tile is and, you know, all that kind of stuff. We don't want anything to do with that stuff. And that would be lined out in this agreement as well as what their role is, what our role is, but what their role is.
Hey, Julie, this is Andy Nelson. How are you?
Hey, great. How are you?
Good. Is Matt available, please?
I believe so. Hold on one moment.
Thank you.
Just authorize him to go forward.
Yeah.
Come up with agreement.
I told him to be ready after 11, so.
A little early.
Yeah.
This is Matt.
Hey, Matt. Andy Nelson. How are you? I'm good. Hey, you're on speakerphone. We're in the middle of our commission meeting. All the commissioners are present, Mary and two other members of the public. We are talking about the, what is it, the
Conservation District
building and an agreement that we need to come to with the Conservation District on construction and all of that stuff. You're pretty well versed in all of that so far.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Can you come up with some type of an agreement for us if we authorize you to do so?
Absolutely, yeah.
All right. Well, I believe we're authorizing you to do so.
All right. And just, my big concern was I don't represent the conservation district. They obviously own the building. And a lot of times in these construction contracts, you don't discover issues till down the road. And so I wanted to make it very clear to the conservation district that they would need to retain their own legal counsel in that case. And move forward with whatever appropriate action they deem necessary. So that was my big concern with the contract.
Okay, yeah, that sounds good. And the county will basically be in charge of the architect, will be overseeing the construction and everything like that. So the county is the entity that will be making the decisions on those concerns.
Okay. Do you want me to put that in the agreement as well?
I would think.
The one thing we don't want to do is with that relationship with the architect, we're not interested in floor covering and paint color, none of that stuff.
Right.
We don't want anything to do with that.
It would be just like structural stuff rather than cosmetic?
I would assume so.
I don't know. I don't know how you describe
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I don't know how do you describe that, Matt? I mean, you just...
I don't know. Let me think about it, because it is a little strange, because we don't own the building, but we're making pretty significant calls on the construction. And, so let me give that some thought. And
we're making some serious changes, structural changes to the building.
Yeah.
Could they give authority to the district to make those decisions since they own the building?
Yeah, I don't see any reason why the commission couldn't do that if they were so inclined.
So if we give authority to the district to make those changes, we need just something in place letting them know that it's not an open checkbook. You know what I'm saying? So if they decide to put the elevator in or whatever, you know.
we can definitely put a not to exceed amount in the agreement so that both parties are clear that, hey, you know, there's only so much money for the project. And after that, then it would be on the conservation district to pay for any additional charges.
Okay. What do you think, gentlemen?
Proceed to that direction. Kind of makes sense. What are we looking at for a time frame, Matt? Or what are they looking at as far as getting something moving on this? Probably next spring?
Maybe not. So, but I'm not sure. Mary might be able to shed some more light on that.
Well, I think they wanted to be done by now. But as you know, we've struggled to get an architect for this project. We've got an architect now. They've included a not to exceed price. So there's another piece to this contract as well, and that is that we've been providing Forsgren and Associates to be the watchdog to put. I mean, they've been involved from the get go to find the architect to negotiate this contract. We're paying for those services for the district in addition to what actually the project's going to cost. So we've got architect costs. We've got owner rep costs, right. We're going to have construction costs for the whole project. I don't know as far as to set a number to, you know, not exceed number on this. I don't have anything budgeted in the budget right now because I haven't got a clue what that number should be, waiting to find out once we get these pieces together so I can amend the budget to include the project. So, you know, there's some of that stuff we're going to have to ferret out. It isn't going to be we're going to probably have to negotiate a little bit with the district on some of those things. But I don't think the commissioners want to be involved in any of the decisions about, the construction of the building and that type of thing. But our owner's rep is going to be there to make sure that they aren't making bad decisions with our money.
That's basically our dog and deal.
Yeah.
Through our owner's rep.
Yeah.
We've got our owner's rep that we will continue to pay for on this project. I don't even know how you come up with a not-to-exceed number.
Not until...
Let me get in touch with Todd and see if there's any... If there's any way to do so. Because it sounds like there's not even a number at this point to exceed, right?
Right.
Not really.
Right. There's not.
So why don't you just move forward on this and start working on it and involve Todd in that, and then just keep us in the loop of what you're finding out.
Sounds good. I will do so.
Perfect. Sounds good. Thanks, Matt.
All right. Take care.
All right. Bye. Okay.
Okay. So you want to sign those?
Yeah.
Okay.
We've already agreed to this, right?
Yeah. So one other thing while you're signing, I made a note that we have not considered the workers' comp committee. The Mac and I have been involved in this statewide workers' comp thing that came through the Commissioners Association. We received that information from Pete probably June or so. We've not brought it back to the table to discuss, but was thinking that maybe you guys might talk about it next week in your meetings to see if anybody else is doing anything.
There will surely be discussion about it.
Yeah.
What we talked about is that we really weren't too excited because we were the ones that were going to financially suffer, but we also didn't want to be the only one that would hold up the entire state. So kind of wait and see where everybody's going.
But it sounded like we weren't going to be the only ones.
No, that's true.
It sounded like there's about a half a dozen or eight or ten others that...
I guess we can just see where we're at.
See where we're at when we get there.
Yes.
Similar to the Wild.
Yeah. Well, and I haven't heard anything from anybody as far as through the clerks or anything about what, you know, because I know that there was...
All I remember is, and Pete requested, if you're considering saying no before you do, he would be willing
He'd be willing to come to
a meeting and... I'm trying to brief everybody on the situation.
But I don't think you guys are even at that point to...
I don't know that we're there yet.
Yeah, because we haven't discussed it or really looked at it.
We don't know any more now than we did 3 months ago.
Okay.
Anything else for us here, Mary?
The only other thing that I've got is this deal with NACO, and I think Tom's going to bring that up during old business.
Okay.
When I got vouchers, that's it.
Sounds good. Yep. So let's start with old business, then Mayor Commissioner Rawhouse.
Let me go into my notes here. Well, I've kind of talked about the meeting last night with Shad and just again speaking that what a great job they're doing and keeping us informed and just moving forward. I received a letter, Mary just gave it to me, and I've been again appointed to the Public Lands Committee for NACO and also for the Veterans Military Service Committee.
Cool.
So I'll probably be asking to go. I'm sure, Joel, you'll be going to that meeting. In Washington in March.
Yeah, that's the legislative conference.
That's the conference. Yeah. So I myself personally, I think some other guys need to get involved too. But I'm not going
to
go there.
I think we're happy to send you and Joel. Yeah. All in favor, say aye.
Okay. So, other than that, that's about all I have.
Okay, thank you. Commissioner Noble?
The work group met, and as you know, Joanne and her group will be here tentatively on the 2nd. Is that still a go, Mary? It is on their end.
Is it? Yeah, okay. Yeah, because I confirmed back to you guys that I've moved the appointments. Yes. So your meeting will start at 8 o'clock that morning instead of 9 on the 2nd of October.
Okay. And that's to accommodate the RFP discussion and the grant with CTC. And as far as the NACO topic, I had conversations with Joanne yesterday. She's very well versed in that topic. If you guys would like to hear from her, we can call her quick and put her on speakerphone. It was very enlightening listening to her.
I briefly just went through that the letter that you forwarded to us, and I think if I don't know that we need to talk with her. I think if everybody's okay with the letter that she's written, then we can.
Her concerns in line with concerns with NACO?
Yes, yes. I think, like I said, after talking to her for some time yesterday, I would advise you to hear her out. It's pretty enlightening, but that's your call. And maybe she won't answer, I don't know.
Well, are we going to learn anything that we don't know through this letter?
I would suspect yes. Unless she's
hurt or something. All right, well, try and get a hold of her on
it. So, before you jump off onto that, I'm just looking at the mechanics of this. We have to submit a letter by midnight tomorrow night through the NACO website. So, how's that going to happen?
Well, she's drafted.
Sorry, I asked Joanne if she would have any interest in drafting
the letter. She drafted that letter.
On behalf of Sublette County after Andy and I talked. And she said she would be honored to, and she wrote the letter, and I emailed it to you shortly. You may not have read it yet.
I just got
today?
It. Yeah.
Just about 20 minutes ago, I received it from her.
Yeah.
Why was there such a short amount of time to respond?
Had to do with the FCC.
She's really fired up about this because she said there's three people at the FCC that are dictating what all the elected officials are doing across the country, and she's really against that in multiple directions because we lose control of our right-of-ways and all the public lands in our county with this direction that the FCC's taking.
Well, why don't you go ahead and try and get her on the phone there, Tom?
Okay.
You got that on your
iPad.
I would do it
if you could get it brought up. There, I got
it. Do we have service in here?
We do.
Yeah. I have the letter.
Good morning, Joanne. How are you doing? We are in open meeting in the press and a couple people here. I'll put you on speakerphone and we'll go from there. I'll turn it over to you. Thank you, John. Let me turn you off.
So here you lead the discussion, Tom.
Okay, Joanne, you're on speaker now. Just turn it over to you.
Great. Good morning, everyone. Nice to speak with you, as always. Tom asked me to join you just for a few minutes to give you a quick briefing as your broadband consultant about some of what is going on in Washington, D.C. at the Federal Communications Commission at the moment. And you may have all already seen some update materials from the National Association of Counties expressing pretty considerable concern on behalf of counties throughout the country about a pending proceeding at the Federal Communications Commission. There's actually a draft order that has been circulated, and the commission will be voting in a relatively short period of time on a draft order having to do with broadband deployment in the wireless area in particular. And the draft order from the FCC, which the FCC is now getting comment on until late tomorrow night, it will be receiving and accepting letters and filing and reports on this topic. And I encourage you to file on behalf of the community in Sublette County. But what the order does is that the FCC effectively says that it is local governments that are a substantial barrier to deployment of next-generation wireless infrastructure and facilities. And the FCC purports that it has the authority to preempt local authority with regard to placement of what are known as small cells or certain kinds of wireless equipment on public property, including in the public rights of way and on locations like public light poles and traffic lights, traffic signals, and so on. And the FCC asserts that it can require all localities throughout the United States to live with certain kinds of technical requirements, certain kinds of time frames in which localities are obligated to act on applications from wireless carriers. And the FCC further asserts in this draft order that it can limit what localities can negotiate for compensation for use of public property. And it, what it does, it effectively requires that the recurring fees for companies to put their equipment on public property have to be limited to what the FCC calls objectively reasonable costs, and then it sets that number at about $270 per site per year. It also limits what localities are able to do with regard to asking companies to meet local aesthetic needs, such as requiring undergrounding or requiring other kinds of efforts to make facilities fit in aesthetically to local communities and to local standards. There's lots more detail on what the document does, but if I may sort of summarize my concerns about it, the first one is that this is the Federal Communications Commission. There are four commissioners at the moment, usually five, but there's one vacancy. But these are four commissioners who are appointed. They are not elected. They are appointed officials sitting in Washington, D.C., and purporting to be able to determine on behalf of every county and town and village and city in the United States how public property should be managed for these purposes. And that is, in and of itself, problematic. By asserting their authority and overruling your authority, this also, in my view, eliminates the potential for negotiations at the local level between public and private entities, which is how, in my experience, broadband deployment happens. When a county is able to say, a private company, we will negotiate with you, we will come up with an innovative and creative way to work together, and our public property is one of the things that we will potentially be willing to negotiate, make available to you in return for your commitments, and let's work together on this kind of strategy. That is a very successful way to move the ball forward on broadband at the local level, in my experience. The FCC saying that you can't do that and limiting your authority with regard to these kinds of things by imposing certain kinds of processes and timelines and limiting the fees you can charge, I would consider to be actually not particularly helpful and indeed sort of destructive from the standpoint of maximizing your ability to work creatively and locally on broadband, which is where these things happen, not in Washington. And finally, and I think this may be my biggest concern with the draft order, is that what the FCC says in the draft order is that by doing this, it will reduce the cost for the big mobile companies, meaning AT&T, Verizon, T-Mobile, Sprint, and the companies that serve them. It will reduce their costs in the big cities and in metropolitan areas. And by reducing their costs in that way, it will then, presumably, the FCC says, this will lead to increased investment in rural areas, particularly with regard to next-generation wireless through small cells, which is colloquially known as 5G. 5G technology is the next generation of wireless that will hopefully be faster. And from my standpoint, that linkage is a fallacy. Just because a company is paying less rent for public property in New York City or San Francisco or Seattle does not mean it is going to be more inclined to go and build new infrastructure in rural communities. The fact that a company is made more profitable in one part of the country doesn't mean that it's going to be willing to invest in areas it already considers unprofitable. And the reason we don't have really robust broadband from those big companies in rural communities is because they can't make enough profit to justify it. Whereas they're going to build in New York City and San Francisco regardless, doesn't matter what the fees are. This is not effectively going to change the economics of broadband in Sublette County. It may make the companies more profitable in New York, but it's not going to change anything about what they do in Sublette County. And that is my concern, because it is almost like it's a smokescreen saying this is about rural, when it, in my view, it's not about rural. This does not improve the fortunes in rural communities. Rural communities need real solutions for improving broadband, real significant important solutions, and this is a distraction, and in my view it's a pretense that we're solving rural broadband problems when really it's about a battle between the big cities and the companies that the FCC is saying is on behalf of rural communities. So that's my set of concerns, and when Tom asked me for my view, that's what I shared with him. I think it aligns to a great degree with some of what the National Association of Counties has been saying to counties, and I saw the communication that NACA sent out, and I would just encourage you all, you know, as representatives of the community in Sublette County, as a very forward-thinking and innovative county around broadband that's working on public-private partnerships, tell that story to the FCC and tell them that you are better off with authority, not with having your authority removed by an unelected body in Washington.
And that also doesn't mean, Joanne, just because of the large companies are going to save some money, that they're going to pass that on to us. They're going to keep making their money.
That's exactly right. That is, I think, the central and most important insight here, that somehow they don't seem to get in Washington, which is, you make the company more profitable in the big cities, why on earth would that lead them to invest in rural communities that they don't consider to be desirable markets from the standpoint of profitability? It's not making them more profitable if they come to Sublette County. It's just making them more profitable in the city.
It's making them more profitable, period. We appreciate the letter that you drafted there, Joanne, and I think we would like to submit that on behalf of Sublette County.
Thank you.
Okay.
We'd like to thank you, Joanne.
It's my pleasure. Thank you all. Thank you for being an important voice on behalf of rural America, because unfortunately I think much of the debate in Washington purports to be about rural communities, and it's not. And I think we need to reorient it. So let me encourage you also to send your letter to your congressional delegation, because they, I think, will understand very much where you're coming from. And I am around and hope to be a resource. If any questions come up or anything else, please don't hesitate to let me know.
Okay, I appreciate that. Now, do Tom, do we know how to submit this letter?
Yeah, it's in that.
I've got it.
Okay.
Yeah, she's got it.
Joanne, I really appreciate you taking time to write this letter in such a short notice and to meet with us or discuss this. Thank you.
Thank you all.
Yeah, thank you, Joanne.
Have a good afternoon.
You too.
You too.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye.
Let's copy NACO, our congressional delegation, governor's office.
Yep.
Did you guys all like the letter?
Yeah, she did a good job.
Yeah, she did a good job. Do you, can you do that for us, Mary?
Yep.
Okay. Are we incurring a fee with this letter?
I would assume, but
I don't know.
Oh,
you know, Tom?
If she does charge, it'll come out of that consulting fee, I don't believe.
We got a fee for that phone call. You can bet.
That was my question. Oh, I saw this NACO thing yesterday, and I was going to suggest that Tom write the letters.
Well, he did.
Well, yeah.
By proxy.
Yeah, by proxy.
Yeah, he did a good job, didn't you, Tom?
I'd come out way better than if I would have wrote it.
Okay.
I got a couple of three bad boys.
I think it'll be it'll be within our contract with them.
I assumed that when I asked her.
Yeah. You don't get anything for nothing.
So it was a book. No worries.
Okay.
Does that give you something to move forward with too, Joel?
What's that?
Does that give you some gut feeling? Because in your conversations, you'll probably be more likely to have that.
Well, I will have a conversation about this in the interior department. It's a whole different deal.
It was just sitting there.
I don't even know what it is. FCC, who do they report to in the administration? Okay. I don't know. I don't even know that, understand the structure of the Federal Communications Commission.
I think that's a good question. I'll find out. How's that?
Excuse me. Smoke.
Yeah. All right, Tom, you want to continue with old business? Good, thank you. Appreciate that, Commissioner Burnett.
Do you want to take Andre or continue on? Or?
Andre, let's get you back to work.
Okay.
Yeah, so give us the poop.
So the water thing with the water jug for the district court, it's $13.50 a month for the machine and $7 a bottle.
So did we actually get a price reduction if we have 10?
No, we looked at another. Just trying to wrangle us into another.
Gotcha.
And so I just said no.
Good man.
Yeah.
Good man.
So you'll get all new machines. I'm like, okay.
Thank you anyway.
Yeah,
appreciate it.
So $13.50 a month, $7 a bottle, and they're about the same size as the attorney's office, and they're going through 6 or 7 bottles a month.
So we've got bottles in the break room. We've got bottles in the attorney's office.
We only got bottles in one place, and that's in the attorney's office. The rest of them are all hardline.
Oh, that's right. That's right. They're hardline.
And so it's going to be about $60 a month is what I'm guessing with the water.
Did you say there was bottles at the Road and Bridge earlier?
Road and Bridge hasn't, but they pay. They're on their own bill.
They're on their own budget. Yeah. I'm just saying it's hard to.
Yeah.
And actually, the deal with Road and Bridge, that was out there because we were on the public well that everybody was
draining.
Yeah.
Or the water well. And
worried about the water quality.
Yeah. We were testing for water quality and that type of thing.
Yeah.
There's a machine downstairs. There's a machine in the break room. You know?
Yeah, I can't. You know, you guys know where I stand. We don't need any more bottles flying around here. If the water in town isn't quality enough to drink, then fill your jug up at home and bring it with you.
I'll support that.
It's quality enough to
drink. I drink it every day.
Me too.
I'm good.
Gentlemen?
Good.
Okay. I'm good.
Thanks.
Okay.
And then, that maybe eliminate the machines we got.
I have tried this. I have already tried this.
That's the problem is once they got them.
Yeah.
They got them.
I've tried to get rid of the bottles, and every time I pay a Shadow Mountain bill every month.
Well, see, we don't buy bottles. They're hardlined.
Yeah.
So we're paying. The attorney's office is the only one that's got bottles.
Right. So are they hardlined to what? To the town water supply?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then they go through a machine.
So what are we gaining?
They filter.
And then
it's just a filter machine.
Yeah.
And the filter doesn't remove what the town is concerned about in the water.
The town needs every regulation out there, and we're not good enough
to filter anything.
Isn't there a tap in that sink in that break room? with cold water and hot water.
Yeah, kind of like the bathroom in my office.
In my house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. I don't know that we want to go there.
Okay, anyway.
The ice rink, the ice is on. Kids are already skating. I've been there several times over last weekend with my kids, and there's been a lot of activity. Planet Hockey, I guess, called Grant and was asking him about maybe they wanted to do a clinic. I think he said over Christmas break time, and the guy was trying to do a sales pitch, and Grant's like, "Let's do it." And the guy's like, "Well, wait.
I got to talk you into it.
Yeah, yeah. And he kept going. And he goes, don't keep selling, you know, after
we're done.
Already made the
we're
sale.
Good.
So,
come on over.
So hopefully we can get that happening.
Cool.
And so
get him coming.
It's going great. We still don't have the guy down from Canada yet. He's still held up trying to get across the border. So sounds like his paperwork is all done and cleared, but they just won't stamp it. And we think it might have something to do with the trade stuff going on
in
the rest of the world. So.
Yeah, yeah.
But we really need them here. So if you got any connections, make that call. Because if we get another, we can only use two compressors right now. And if one of the seals continues to go bad, we'll be in trouble.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Okay.
That's it. But everything else.
Keep us posted.
Okay.
We can't do anything for Canada. Sorry.
Wow, that's too bad.
Yeah.
That's an immigration issue, though. We can see if we can help out on that.
Cool.
Is it an immigration?
We think it's more on the guy's been down many times, and it's more I think the trade thing. They're trying to get him to come to the table,
really?
And so they're not stamping.
Well, why don't you give her a buzz and just fill her in on what's going on and what we need and why we can't get it?
Okay.
We need it to benefit here, and if he has employment potentials here, and if it's to benefit the county somehow or the city, then we can look into it. Yeah.
Yeah, we just need him to come and work on the system, and they're the only ones that can do it.
Yeah. We can try.
Okay.
Awesome.
All right. Thank you.
Caller.
There you go.
All right.
All right. Have a
Thanks.
Good day.
See you, Andre.
See you, Andre.
Yep, see ya.
All right, Commissioner Burnett.
I attended that working group conference with CGC with Tom. I think they're moving forward with doing that RFP. I don't know how that may be impacted with the decision the next day for Marlton and Big Piney to sign a contract with Union, but we should have a copy of that RFP to review before our next meeting.
Possibly the end of this week.
Okay.
And then also went to Lander on the 12th to go to the Office of Homeland Security's meeting there on long-term power outage, all hazards planning, which was actually a very informative meeting, quite a lot to think about. I'm sure Jim Mitchell will get us updated on that. I think he went to the meeting in Jackson the previous day. There were commissioners from both Hot Springs and Crook County, and it was a couple hour meeting, but some useful information came about from it. So
good.
That's what I got.
Thank you, Commissioner. Appreciate it. Commissioner Bowser?
Went to Laramie after our last meeting for a legislative, the Interim Natural Resource Committee of the legislature includes both representatives and senators to testify on how Sublette County uses their FNRPA funding. There's an effort in the legislature to appropriate more money available to counties to participate with federal agencies. Also some discussion, had the guy there that was Utah's natural resource person for the governor of Utah, and he explained to the legislature how the Utah legislature requires every county in Utah to have a natural resource plan, and they also funded the cost of doing it. The legislature seems interested in looking into that. In Wyoming, it would more than likely include an update of natural resource plans for counties that already have them in place. There's several that do. Really good support from the legislature for what counties are doing, at least for that committee. So it seemed like a worthwhile trip. Then I went to the PILT SRS fly-in, and I've got a handout to everybody. I just passed it around on. It was a summary of what went on. I forget how many meetings, like 60 bipartisan congressional offices that we covered. We were split into 7 or 8 different working groups, and 30-minute appointment every 30 minutes on Capitol Hill, and I mean, it was one busy day.
I bet.
Getting around to that many offices that night. We had a debriefing. And then on Friday of that day, on Friday, we had all the group that was signed up ahead of time to get permission to go in the White House. We had a meeting with Department of Interior and USDA, and there's some summary of that on this sheet. I questioned the Deputy Secretary of Interior, David Bernhardt, concerning Secretary Zinke's priorities, one of which included bringing the decision-making process closer to the ground at the local level with more input from local and state governments. I told him flat out that if that was going to be successful, somebody from Interior needed to come to Wyoming and actually have a discussion with local and state governments as to what that could look like on the ground, what makes sense, what doesn't make sense, that sort of thing. And he immediately told me he could meet with us in Wyoming in Cheyenne on the 21st, which is Friday. So I've been kind of busy since I got home working with the governor's office to get the state people on board. They're there. Mike McGrady is the point person now for Governor Meade. And his message to me was, we need to strike while the iron's hot. Let's get him here, even though there's not much. The governor can't be there because he's already committed out somewhere else, which was a little disappointing, but understandable on that short a note.
Yeah.
So I worked with Bailey, and we got the Public Lands Committee of WCCA has all been invited. I haven't heard yet how many commissioners will be there. There will be several, and several of the governor's cabinet will be there. We've got an agenda, a draft agenda, which you could pass that on around. For everybody to look at, and you're welcome to a copy of both of these to take with you if you want it. Liz might be interested because it was one of the things I talked about with Liz when we discussed it, is how to make local governments more effective in the federal decision-making process. And with this support, tentatively, from this administration, we just might get something done. So I felt pretty good about that.
Awesome. You've been busy, and then you're headed to Cheyenne Friday.
Headed to Cheyenne Friday. I'll go Thursday. The meeting's at 10 o'clock Friday morning.
Gotcha.
And I've got dinner at Little America Thursday night with Mark Gordon's, some of his people that wanted to be briefed on this.
Cool.
Whatever happens here is going to carry over into the next administration. There probably won't get anything implemented before that anyway.
Right.
So
right.
Anyway.
Beautiful.
Stuff happening.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner Bowsman. Anything further?
I think that's all I need to talk about.
Thank you. Appreciate all your hard work on that. It's nice to have somebody representing not only our county but our state on these matters, and your willingness to travel and your willingness to do all that, because it takes a lot of time, it takes a lot of money. appreciate it.
Yeah, well, it takes county money for me to travel too.
Well, you're losing money at home. You're not home ranching.
That's right.
So
That's right.
Appreciate that. I can't even remember all the people I talked and met with in the last 2 weeks, so I'll just spare you all the grisly details.
About White Pine.
Continue to move forward on White Pine. And that's basically all I've got to report on that right now.
We've hit a brick wall there, or?
Not really.
Okay.
Yeah, not really. We're moving forward. Yeah, we're moving. So have you got everything done that you need to get done there, Mary?
I have two things I want to talk to you about, and okay. They're bill related, and that's it.
Okay.
I have a voucher that came in from this has to do, remember, flashback to the road into Kismet to the tower, mm-hmm. and we stuck a truck and we called for help. And Dave Smith called for help. This was before we had really any kind of a working agreement with anybody how we were going to take care of the rest of the business that has to do with the Harris Project. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we have a towing bill here. And there's a little... There isn't anybody out there that wants to approve this thing for payment.
Nobody wants to approve
it came to me, and I said, I'll take a run at it. It probably needs to be paid. Somebody did go out and pull a truck out, and this was this outfit. That,
core sampling outfit.
Core sampling outfit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, pay it.
Okay. Here you go.
It needs to be paid. We could argue for days as to who's responsible.
What kind of truck was it? Just a pickup?
No. It was a core sampling truck.
So it was a heavy truck.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just your average stuff.
Yeah. And there wasn't help available, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's one of those deals.
Right.
Then I have...
How much was it? $5.25.
The other question that I've got for you guys, just, and I have this bill and you guys can approve it for payment today if you'd like. If you'll recall, we give money to Van Vleck House in Jackson for long-term housing for troubled youth kind of situations. We've received a bill for a particular kid that was there from the 1st of April till about the first part of August. And I did contact them and said, okay, you know, 1st of April was last budget. We turned money back to the budget because they didn't use, we budgeted $45,000 for them for like a long time.
Right.
We didn't turn that, we turned that money back. They weren't completely used up. I said, so this is going to come out of your, this year money because that money's gone.
Right.
So that's one issue. But the other issue with this is that these placements are not necessarily happening through any agencies. It isn't like DFS places these kids there or the county attorney's office, you know, however that happens. And in this particular case, this kid was taken up and placed by his parents, I think. You know, we've gone through the county attorney's office. I've talked to Van Vleck. I guess we don't have any way, I mean, and I don't know how you guys feel about this. You may not care a bit, and it may be just me that it's kind of bothering, but these kids get placed. We really don't have any involvement with that placement, so we can't really verify...
Need.
We can't really verify anything because it wasn't a placement that was made by any agency that we had short of a parent placing a kid.
What criteria do they have, Van Vleck House, before they accept a placement? Surely there's something there.
Wouldn't you think some parents signed some papers?
Yeah, well, and what happens is these kids need to get out of their living situation that they're in for whatever those things are. And we know what those criteria are. It's kids that have got to get out of that home.
Right.
That they take them out of the home and they put them in another place for a while till they can get them squared away or whatever.
So do somebody surely reviews that and makes a decision that yes, this.
Well, they accept them. They decide that they're acceptable
based on.
And we're funding them based on their decisions.
Right. That's true. We are. In a situation like this, it's probably better to err on the side of mercy than.
Well, and that's kind of my feeling. The thing that makes me a little nervous is that I don't have any way to verify this.
Right.
It's like when the cops buy bullets, I can find out how many bullets they bought. Or if, you know, those kinds of things.
Yeah.
When everybody buys whatever, there's somebody signing off and saying, yeah, we received this service, whatever. When you guys fund these nonprofits, we kind of lose some of that.
We're taking Van Vleck's word for it,
this
kid needed to be out of there.
And right.
So
But
you're right. It comes out of this year's budget because last year's budget's gone.
Yeah. And I told Jeremy that. I said, I said, last year's money's gone.
Yeah.
I said, so your 45 this year is going to pick up that April to June.
Yeah.
You know.
So they need to understand that for another year. So if they have something in April, May, and June, they need to get it into us then.
He gets that. You know, in these agencies, it's just like, look, your billing, you need to have your billing current.
Right.
There is no organization in the county that works with Van Vleck House.
To make referrals?
Well, DFS does. DFS does, and so does the county attorney's office.
That's not the sole source of their referrals.
But that's not the sole source of their referrals. Their referrals could come, I don't know, could they come through the medical community?
They probably could.
They can come through the sheriff's office.
Yeah, but I think if there's a need, and that is a resource, then whomever can call and request those services based on what their resources and their criteria are.
Right.
You don't necessarily have to go through an agency.
I think that's right.
That's true. And Van Vleck House decides whether they take them or not.
And I think the relationship in the past has been purely based upon their credibility and their honesty.
Yeah.
So this is not a complaint from Van Vleck House.
It's a request for payment.
It's just a request for payment.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I'm the one that's questioning it.
Okay.
But I want you guys to know that, you know, not only do we get ones that come that we can track back and say, hey, you know, county attorney's office, are you guys aware of this? Do you know? Yeah, we did. You know, we were involved in that placement. DFS, were you involved in this placement? And even DFS, I mean, they're a state agency. They've got no authority to obligate your money.
Right.
Basically, but. This is a situation where we know we've got long-term kids coming out of Sublette County that program's taken the hit for. And,
you know, and Van Vleck House has been very honorable and very trustworthy in the past. And I guess I look at it as if they felt that this child needed to be removed from that situation and placed into the Van Vleck House, then that's probably what needed to happen.
Yeah, and it's the urgency that surrounds the nature and scope of their work.
Right.
Yeah.
That's it for me.
Okay. You sure?
I think so. Mr. Chairman, I'm going to put the broadband letter on letterhead and use your stamp.
Okay, thank you.
Are you okay with that?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Because seeing how it's got to be in by midnight tonight.
Yeah, I'll do it tomorrow. I'll do that before I leave.
Terrific.
This afternoon.
At 11:30 tonight?
No, I'll do it before I leave Pinedale.
Good. Awesome. All right. Isn't it Wednesday? It's got to be submitted by Wednesday.
Midnight tomorrow night.
Tomorrow night.
The 19th.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Good deal. You got one more day.
Today's the 19th, isn't it?
Yeah, but I don't, I'm, you know.
Today's the 18th.
Yeah.
Today's.
Got it.
Where's your, where's this committee meeting?
Dermot.
Dermot. Yeah, I think it's Wednesday.
Yeah. 8:30 in the morning.
Yeah. Today is my first wife's anniversary.
Lucky for her, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah.
31 like years.
Oh. Congratulations.
Thank you. You better congratulate her.
Yeah. She's the one that needs the congratulations.
First wife's anniversary.
You are.
Are you giving me your pen back?
Oh, yeah. Thank you. We are adjourned.
Wife number one.
Yep, wife number one.